Listening Library presents Amal Unbound by Aisha Saeed. Read for you by Priya Ayar. Chapter 1. I watched from the window as the boys tumbled out of the brick schoolhouse across the field from us. Our class was running over, again. Girls shifted in their seats and sneaked glances at the clock above the chalkboard. My friend Hafsa sighed. "And finally, I have some bad news," Miss Sadia told us. She picked up a stack of papers from her desk. "I finished grading your math tests. Only 5 of you passed." The class let out a collective groan. "Now, now," she hushed us. "This just means we have more work to do. We'll go over it tomorrow and take another test next week." "Those questions were hard," my younger sister Seema whispered to me. We lined up by the chalkboard at the front of the class to get our tests. "I should have stayed with the younger class until fall." "Oh, come on. You know you probably passed," I whispered back. "When have you ever failed an exam?" Seema tugged at her sleeves as she walked up to Miss Sadia. It was only in the arms that you could see my old uniform was too big on her. Miss Sadia handed Seema the paper. As expected, Seema's worried expression shifted to a smile. Her steps were lighter before she slipped out of the classroom. "I'm sorry I can't help today," I told Miss Sadia once the room was empty. This was my favorite part of the day, when everyone left and it was just the two of us. The building felt like it had exhaled, expanding a little bit without all 34 of us, crammed 2 to a desk, filling up nearly every square inch of space. "My mother is in bed again."
"Is the baby almost here?"
"Yes. So my father said I have to come home and watch my sisters." "I'll miss your help, Amal, but he's right. Family comes first." I knew helping family was what a good eldest daughter did. But this time after school with Miss Sadia wasn't just fun. It was important. I wanted to be a teacher when I grew up. And who better to learn from than the best teacher I ever had? I loved washing the chalkboards, sweeping the floor, and hearing stories of her college days. I loved watching her go over her lessons and rework them based on what worked and what didn't the day before. I learned so much from watching her. How could my father not understand? "I could still use your help with the poetry unit next week," she told me. "Some of the students are grumbling about it. Think you could convince Hafsa to give it a chance? You know how she rallies the others to her side. She'll listen to you." "I don't think she minds reading the poems. Writing them makes her nervous."
"You'd think everyone would be happy to write poetry. Shorter than an essay."
"It's different. The great poets like Ghalib, Rumi, Iqbal, they had things to say."
"And don't you have things to say?"
"What would I write about?" I laughed. "My little sisters? My father's sugarcane fields and orange groves? I love reading poems, but there's nothing for me to really write about. Our life is boring."
"That's not true. Write about what you see. Write about your dreams. Pakistan was founded by the dreams of poets. Aren't we of the same earth?"
Miss Sadia's dramatic way of talking was one of the reasons I loved her, but I wasn't convinced. It's not that I wasn't proud of my family and our life. I was lucky to belong to one of the more prosperous families in our Punjabi village. But it didn't change the fact that I lived in a village so tiny, it didn't even register as a dot on a map. But I promised I'd talk to Hafsa. This is what I now remember most about my last afternoon at school. The smell of the dusty chalkboard, the sound of the students lingering outside the door, and mostly, how easily I took my ordinary life for granted. Chapter 2. I raced down the school's gravel walkway to catch up to Seema and Hafsa. The sun blazed overhead, warming my chador and my hair beneath it.
I'm buying Miss Sadia one of those bells I see on TV. You know, the kind that rings when class is over?
Hafsa grumbled.
She doesn't always keep us late, I protested. Remember last week, Hafsa said, how she went on and on about constellations? By the time I got home, my brothers were out of their school clothes and halfway through their homework.
But wasn't it interesting? I asked. The way the night stars help us when we're lost and tell all sorts of different stories?
Why do I need to know about connecting dots in the sky?
I want to be the first doctor in my family, not the first astronaut, Hafsa said. Hafsa and I had been friends so long, I couldn't remember a time I didn't know her. But when she talked like this, I didn't understand her at all. Unlike Hafsa, I wanted to know everything there was to know. How fast did airplanes fly? Why did some leave whiffs of clouds in their wake and others didn't? Where did ladybugs go when the rain came hard and fast? What was it like to walk through the streets of Paris or New York or Karachi? There was so much I didn't know that even if I spent my whole life trying, I knew I could only learn a small percentage of it.
How's your mom? Hafsa asked.
My mother said her back is hurting.
It's gotten worse, I told her. She couldn't get out of bed yesterday.
My mother said that's a good sign. Backaches mean a boy, Hafsa said.
I know that would make your parents happy.
It would be fun to have a brother, I said.
There it is. Look at the door,
Hafsa said when we turned the bend toward our homes. She pointed to the building that had appeared next to our village mosque. A structure had never emerged quite like this before with no explanation. 2 weeks ago, a concrete foundation had been poured onto the field where we played soccer. The next week, brick walls arose and windows appeared. And today, there was a door, painted lime green.
Any idea yet what it could be? I asked her.
Yes, Hafsa grinned. If Hafsa could have it her way, she'd be permanently stationed by the crates of fruit at her family's market, soaking up every bit of gossip.
Hansab is building a factory.
I rolled my eyes. Rumors and gossip were a part of life in our village. Some of the talk was ordinary, about the state of the crops or the weather, but often it centered on Hansab, our village's powerful landlord.
Why would he build a factory here? He has plenty in Islamabad and Lahore, Seema said.
What we need is a clinic. Look how much Amma's back hurts. The doctor in town is good, but this village needs a proper clinic.
Do you really think Hansab would put up anything to help us? Hafsa scoffed.
Maybe it's not him building it, I suggested.
Look at the fancy green door. Who else has time and money to waste like that? You know I'm right.
Any unexplainable situation was always pinned to Hansab. He was the mysterious figure I'd heard of all my life, but never seen. When I was younger, he loomed large and scary, like a character in a horror story.
Sure, he's the one who breathes fire when he talks, right? I rolled my eyes.
Didn't he pick all the fruit off Nema's guava tree? Seema winked.
I heard he's why we've had no rain for months, I continued.
I don't decide what I hear, Hafsa huffed. I just report it.
We'll find out what it is soon enough. I hooked my arm through Seema's.
But in the meantime, let's hope it's a clinic. Hafsa's house came first on our path, just past the post office. Then came mine. I saw it in the distance, gray like the others surrounding it, except for the roses my mother planted around its border just before I was born. They still bloomed each spring around this time, without fail. It's why spring was my favorite time of year. My friend Omar pedaled past us in his blue and khaki school uniform. He chimed his bell 3 times, our signal to meet. The stream. That's the direction he was headed in.
Oh, no.
I looked in my book bag. I left my exam in class.
Again?
Hafsa frowned. Tell Amma I won't be long, I asked Seema. Seema hesitated. Our father would be home soon, but she knew Omer didn't chime his bicycle bell 3 times unless it was important.
Okay, Seema nodded. Hurry.
Chapter 3. Omer waited for me by the narrow stream that sliced through the length of our village. This was one of our usual spots, the wooded area next to my father's fields, where our towering green stalks of sugarcane met the orange groves that dotted the landscape into the horizon. This area was far enough from the heart of the fields, where our workers spent most of their time fertilizing the earth and keeping the groves and stalks trimmed and cared for. But even if they ventured to the edges, the shade trees here were thick and leafy, shielding us from view.
I brought it, he said
when I approached and sat next to him on the fallen tree bridging the stream. He handed me a book with a burnt orange cover. I ran my hands over the raised lettering. The Complete Works of Hafiz. We had a small collection of books in our class, but it was no secret that the boys' school had a much bigger library to choose from.
So, what did you think? I asked him. Which one was your favorite poem?
Favorite? He frowned.
Omer! I exclaimed. You didn't even read one poem?
I bring you what you like. Doesn't mean I have to read it.
Yes, you do, I poked him. I need someone to talk about it with.
Fine, he said, raising his hands in surrender. I'll read some after you're done. That's how good of a friend I am. Omer's dark hair looked almost brown under the bright afternoon sun. Looking at him, it hit me yet again how unfair it was for God to give me a friend who understood me completely and create him as a boy.
Amal, I know he's your friend, but you're not a little girl anymore, my mother had lectured me a few months ago when I turned 12. You can't spend so much time with him.
But he's like our brother, I had protested. How can I not see him?
Of course you'll see him around the house. Some conversations can't be avoided. But walking to school together, talking freely the way you both do, people will start gossiping if they aren't already.
Omer and I were born 3 days apart. He lived with his mother, our servant Perveen, in the shed behind our house. They moved there after his father died, and I'd never known life without him. He was part of the fabric of who I was. I couldn't follow this rule. Neither could Omer. So now we met in secret to talk, to listen to each other, to laugh.
I told Miss Sadia I wouldn't be able to stay after school, I said. I'm hoping it's just until the baby comes, but my father said we'll have to see how it goes.
Once things settle down, he'll change his mind.
I hope you're right, I said.
Your father probably got fed up because Safa unlatched a neighbor's chicken coop again. You know you're the only one who can keep up with her.
Omer, she did not.
I tried to stay serious, but a smile escaped. My youngest sister was a constant source of drama in our house.
See? You know I'm right. Your poor father probably spent the morning chasing chickens and apologizing to neighbors.
You need to stop with the Safa conspiracies all the time, I told him.
Ha! He grinned. I'm going to have to become a lawyer. Safa will need a team of them with the trouble she gets into.
She's only 3! I swatted him, but just like that, some of the heaviness lifted. He was right. Besides, my father usually gave in to us if we pleaded enough.
Speaking of school, the headmaster from Khaleb Academy called.
I got in.
Omer! I exclaimed. I knew it! Didn't I say so?
And they're going to cover everything. Room and board, all of it. This could change everything for me, Amal. If I do well enough, I could get one of their college scholarships. Can you believe it? Maybe I'll even get my mother her own house one day.
I hugged him.
Omar had been attending the school across from mine, but Khaleb was one of the best schools around, a boys' boarding school a few towns over.
Attending it was a lucky break for a servant's son like Omer. He was right. It could truly change everything for him. I wonder what the library there is like, I said.
That was fast, he laughed. Can I settle into the school first before you have me hunting down books for you?
No way, I said. But I bet they'll have more books than both our classrooms combined. And Hafsa told me some boarding schools have cafeterias with all the food you can eat and televisions in all the bedrooms.
I don't know about that, he said.
But they do have an after-school chess club and a debate team. And the dorm has a computer lab we can use in our spare time. The only thing is, I'll have to share a room with another student. Maybe even two students.
Do you know who they'll be?
No. I'll meet them when I go there for orientation weekend. But it'll be strange living with people I don't know. Hafsa's already staked her claim on me to be her roommate when we go to college someday.
Well, at least with Hafsa as a roommate, you'll be up to date on all the inside information about everyone and everything on campus.
That's definitely a plus, I laughed. The clink of glass bracelets shattered our solitude. It was Seema. She ran toward us, her feet bare.
Come quick, she said between gasps of breath. The baby is coming.
Chapter 4. The 5 minutes it took to run to my home on the other side of the field felt like a lifetime. We zigzagged through the sugarcane, taking shortcuts through the maze we knew so well. Our feet crunched over twigs and fallen leaves until we tumbled into the clearing that led to my house. Flinging open the front door, I raced through our living room and straight into my parents' bedroom. My mother lay in bed. A thin sheet was draped over her. Rahila Bibi, the midwife, pressed a damp towel to her forehead. My mother's eyes were shut, her jaw clenched.
But this wasn't supposed to happen for another few weeks, I said.
Well, it's happening now, Rahila Bibi rummaged through her bag.
My mother exhaled and opened her eyes. She looked at me. Her cheeks were flushed, and her forehead was pale.
Amal, she said, you shouldn't be in here.
It was true. Unmarried girls, especially my age, weren't allowed in the birthing area. But how could I stay outside when something was obviously wrong?
I'm worried, I told her.
I'm fine, she said. Babies come early all the time. She smiled at me, but her eyes didn't crinkle with the upturn of her lips. She patted my arm and moved to say more, but suddenly she gasped and clenched her jaw again.
I'm here, I squeezed her hand.
A hand touched my elbow. Omer's mother, Perveen, had arrived. Wisps of black hair framed her face from beneath her chador.
Amal, I can stay with her now, Perveen told me.
Will you go take care of Safa and Rabia?
But I want to help.
Taking care of your little sisters is helping. It gives your mother one less thing to worry about.
I wanted to stay, but she was right, and it was too hard seeing my mother like this. I stepped into our living room. Rabia and Safa stood stock still in their cotton frocks next to the faded sofa.
Is Amma okay?
Rabia asked. Her lower lip quivered. Safa bit her nails and said nothing. Rabia was 4 years old, and Safa was 3, but with their matching black curls and dimples, people often mistook them for twins.
Of course. She's fine.
I pushed down my own fear and ran a hand through Rabia's springy hair.
The baby is coming. Aren't you excited to meet your new brother or sister?
They glanced at each other and then nodded at me.
Let's go in your bedroom and dress up your dolls while we wait. We can show them to the baby soon.
Both girls followed me into their bedroom next to the kitchen. Their window overlooked our courtyard, the concrete floor painted peach, where our mother cooked meals when the weather allowed. Safa and Rabia pulled out their dolls and the collection of clothes my mother sewed for them. Soon they were chatting and giggling and getting their dolls ready for a tea party. I tried to focus on their play and push out the image of my mother's closed eyes and pained face. I knew people kept saying they hoped the baby was a boy, but right now, I didn't care. I only wanted my mother to be okay. The door creaked. Omer stood by the edge of the bedroom, his hand resting on the knob.
"How's she doing?"
he asked.
"I don't know. I was only in there with her for a few minutes. But it was scary. She looked so weak."
"Rahila Bibi and my mother know what they're doing," Omer tried to reassure me.
"And you are right here if they need you."
"The book!" I turned to him. "I left it by the stream. We ran so fast I forgot all about it."
"Don't worry about the book. It looked expensive."
"I'll get it. It's not going anywhere."
"What if something happens to her?" My voice cracked.
"We don't know anything yet," he said. "But don't worry. I'll be here if you need me." I appreciated his words because he did not promise me all would be well. He did not know. Neither did I. Chapter 5. My father paced the length of the living room in his leather sandals, while my sister and I sat at the table by the sofa, trying to do our homework. His forehead was slick with sweat. His dark glasses framed his worried expression. We had a bigger house than many, but right now it felt like it was shrinking in on me. Seema and I kept stealing glances at our parents' closed room while our little sisters played in their bedroom. The sun had nearly set when my parents' bedroom door finally opened. The midwife stepped outside and smiled. My jaw unclenched. My mother was okay. She had to be if Rahila Bibi was smiling.
"Congratulations," she said. "You are a father 5 times over now."
"How is Mehnaz?" he asked.
"Tired, but she'll be fine. Go on in and see for yourself."
My father walked into the bedroom. Seema and I followed. The lamp on the nightstand lent a soft glow to the darkened room. The little one, smaller than I expected, lay curled in a blue blanket in my mother's arms.
"What is it?"
my father asked.
"A boy or a girl?" Rahila Bibi said.
"A girl?"
"Yes."
She looked at him.
"A perfect, healthy baby girl."
"Can I hold her?"
I scooped the blanketed baby out of my mother's arms. I traced a finger against her soft nose, her cheeks, and her curved chin, with a dimple like Safa's. Rahila Bibi was right. She was perfect. My breath caught when she gripped my finger with her fist. She was so tiny, but her grip on me so tight, as though she knew I would always protect her. Any disappointment I might have felt at not having a baby brother dissipated like powder in a running stream.
"What should we name her?" I asked. "I have a notebook with the ones I like. Shifa is pretty, but I also like Maha, Maria, Lubna."
That's when I realized the room was unusually quiet. I looked at my mother. She was crying. I was so eager to see the baby, I hadn't noticed the tears streaming down her face. Until now. My father stood by the door. His eyes were red.
"I'm sorry,"
my mother whispered.
"Nothing to be sorry about," he said. "God does what he wants."
Of course I had known they wanted a son. I heard the conversations of our neighbors and the whispers in our own house. But staring at my parents' expressions right now, I saw they didn't look disappointed. They looked crushed. I hadn't been present when my other sisters had been born. Is this how they'd reacted then? Was it the same when I was born, or was it okay since I was the first?
Sometimes I wish I did not pay such careful attention. Maybe then I would not have learned that they thought being a girl was such a bad thing. Chapter 6. Seema and I watched over our new sister in the living room while the morning sun filtered through the windows. We both had stayed home from school all week to help, but tomorrow was Monday, and I looked forward to going back. Our father had left for the fields after morning prayers, and Safa and Rabia were still asleep. I savored the silence, cuddling the sleeping baby in my arms.
"You see that?"
I nudged Seema and nodded at the little one.
"What?"
Seema yawned.
"She smiled in her sleep.
She's going to be a happy one." Seema patted the baby's soft, silky hair.
"You think Amma is okay?" she asked.
"She's always tired after a baby is born," I said. I remembered how it was after Safa. Parveen made all our meals and put us to bed for at least a week.
"Not just that," she fidgeted. "She was so sad."
"I know," I said. As much as I tried to block it out, my parents' expressions were etched into my mind. A knock on the door interrupted our conversation.
"I bet it's Fozia, auntie."
Seema stood up. "Thought she'd have come before now," I said.
"Hope she brought jalebis," Seema said.
Fozia was Hafsa's mother, and usually the first to get details about any happenings in the village. No one could ever get too annoyed with her, though, because she usually came bearing her prize jalebis, the twisted, sticky orange treats that would lure anyone to the door. And with Hafsa's sister's recent engagement, she was making all sorts of desserts.
"Congratulations," she said when Seema opened the door.
Fozia stepped into the house before pulling off her canary-colored chador and settling it around her shoulders. Hafsa tagged along beside her.
"There she is!"
Fozia smiled at the baby and handed Seema her platter of assorted sweets before she walked over and took the little one from my arms.
"Didn't you say backaches meant boy, Amma?"
Hafsa frowned.
"Yes, that's what my mother said anyhow. But who can really predict these things? It's a shame, though. I thought for sure it would be a boy this time."
Fozia clucked her tongue.
"Is your mother handling it okay?"
I stared at Fozia. How could she hold my perfect little sister and shake her head with sympathy?
"Amma is sleeping," Seema said.
"Of course. Well, I'm on my way to the tailor. Hafsa's outgrowing her clothes every time I blink."
She handed the baby back to me.
"Tell your mother I came by."
"See you at school tomorrow,"
Hafsa said, waving. I shut the door.
"Did you hear her?" I fumed. "How dare she say that? Act so sorry for us, and with her own daughter standing right there."
The tube lights above us flickered before shutting off. The overhead fan slowed to a halt. Another blackout. Seema rushed to open the windows. Last week's blackout left us without electricity for over 2 hours. Already I felt the heat rising from the concrete floor. Rabia and Safa came running into the living room. Rabia's face was streaked with tears. She glowered at Safa.
"She took my doll!"
Rabia shrieked. Before Seema or I could respond, Rabia took off after Safa, chasing her around the sofa. Safa laughed and skipped, tripping on the edge of our rug and skidding headfirst into the table. A glass perched on its edge trembled before crashing onto the floor. Water seeped onto her and into the rug. The noise echoed off the walls. Now both girls were crying. My mother must have heard the commotion. She had to. I walked over to her bedroom and peeked inside. The curtains were tightly drawn. Her back was curled to the window, her eyes shut.
"Amma?"
I asked softly, but she didn't respond. The baby began whimpering in my arms. I took a deep breath, closed the door behind me, and looked at my sisters, both of their faces wet with tears. Umma never yelled at us. Despite the younger two and their constant arguments, she found a way to be patient. Until she was better, I had to try. Fortunately, Praveen walked into the house just then. She carried a basket of laundry fresh from the clothesline and set it down before scooping the baby for me.
"Let me get her to your mother," she said, as the overhead fan whirled back on.
"She's sleeping," I said. "I just checked."
"Well, the baby needs to eat," she said. "Don't worry. I'll talk to her."
Seema soothed the girls while I cleaned up the shards of glass. I hadn't understood how much my mother did to keep the house running until Seema and I tried to fill her shoes. Praveen helped us, as always, doing laundry, washing dishes, and chopping vegetables for dinner. But the work kept piling up. And watching two boisterous little girls was a whole job unto itself. We were so busy, I barely noticed the call to evening prayers from the minaret in the distance, or the sun setting outside our window. Seema finished drying dishes with Praveen later that night while I put the girls to sleep. I was hoping to sit for a few minutes when I came out of their bedroom, but cringed when I saw the basket of clothing Praveen had brought in. My mother normally ironed all the clothes as soon as Praveen pulled them off the clothesline. It kept the cotton chemises from getting hopelessly wrinkled. But today, the clothes still sat in their basket, untouched. Our school uniforms lay crumpled at the top of the heap. "I'll get the ironing board," Seema said, reading my mind. "Let's at least get tomorrow's clothing sorted out." I surveyed the house. The girls' dolls lay scattered by the sofa. The groceries Praveen picked up this afternoon rested in burlap sacks in the kitchen. Crumbs littered the rug. And there was still no sign of Umma being ready to get up and help. All she managed was to feed the baby. I still had to change the diapers. "What's wrong?" Seema asked, returning from my parents' bedroom with the iron and narrow metal board. "Everything," I said. "How are we going to keep up with it all and go to school? Look at all these clothes. It'll take me hours to go through them all."
"We'll figure out a system," Seema said.
"You'll do the ironing at night, after the girls go to bed, and in the mornings I'll get everything organized for dinner." But I knew it was impossible. "I'm going to have to stay home," I told Seema.
"I'll stay home too then," Seema said.
"No, you just switched to the upper class a few weeks ago. You can't fall behind."
"But it's too much work for you to do alone."
"Praveen is here too. We'll be fine. I'm sure it will just be a few more days until Amma's back to her old self." I pressed the warm iron to Seema's uniform, hoping what I said was true. Chapter 7. I prepared breakfast for my mother and stepped into her room. The sun was well into the sky, but the curtains were still drawn. The baby lay asleep next to her. I had now missed 9 days of school. My mother was still not better. She managed to come out of her room now and then to get a glass of water. Last night, she even sat listlessly with us in the courtyard for our evening meal. But she wasn't improving fast enough, and the longer I was away from school, the further I fell behind. "I brought you breakfast," I told her. "I added onions to the omelet the way you like."
"Set it on the side table," she said.
"Umma, you need to eat to get your strength," I said.
"I think I need to rest even more."
I knew I should sit with my mother and encourage her to eat, but it wasn't as if she listened to me these days. I glanced at the window. Sunlight peeked from behind the curtains. "I'm going to go to the market. We're out of ginger and peppers. Hafsa said they got a shipment of those biscuits you like. I could pick some up."
"No, thanks. But take Safa and Rabia with you."
"Praveen can watch them. It will take me twice as long if I take them."
"Your father doesn't like you going to the market by yourself."
It was no use protesting. Gripping Safa with one hand and Rabia with the other, I tried to measure my pace so they could keep up with me. The cool morning breeze and clouds thankfully shielded us from the otherwise oppressive heat. The market was a 10-minute stroll, well past the tailor shop and the pharmacy, to the town that bordered our village. This was where nearly everything was, including the open-air market, with all sorts of different stores, and the vendors who sometimes showed up outside with carts of samosas and kulfis. "What has the S sound?" I asked my sisters as we walked. "Who can find something with the S sound first?" Safa craned her neck, studying the brick houses lining the road. Hira, the butcher's wife, waved to us from her front step as we walked past.
"Street," Rabia pointed to the ground. "And stairs," she waved toward a neighbor's concrete steps. "And Safa,"
Safa grinned. "Good job." I patted their heads and picked another letter. This game I came up with was working. It kept them by my side. I thought I wanted to teach students closer to my own age, but I loved helping my sisters learn. Maybe I'd make a good primary teacher. The open-air market came into view. We walked past Bassett's butcher shop. He cleaned off a leg of lamb, readying it to hang on a ceiling hook, along with the day's other fresh cuts of meat. The sweetmaker next door studied his ledger next to the glass display of sweets in rows of orange, yellow, and pistachio green. I could already hear the chatter of my neighbors before I stepped inside the produce store owned by Hafsa's family. It was the most popular store in the market. People even came from neighboring towns to buy from them because they had the best selection. I squeezed past a group of women examining the eggplants and made my way up to the blue crates filled with tomatoes, jalapenos, and radishes. My family's oranges and sugarcane were packed along the back wall. Not for the first time, I wondered how many other little stores all over Pakistan our produce might reach. I loved imagining all the far-flung people eating food that grew from the earth behind my house. Grabbing what we needed at the market, I paid Hafsa's father, Shokat, who seemed grateful I kept my hands so firmly on Safa this time. Last time, she knocked a stool into the wall, sending a shelf of spices crashing to the ground.
"The roof!"
I looked up. Shokat looked at me.
"I thought something was different," I explained, pointing at the ceiling. "The blue tarp is gone. You fixed the hole."
"I did. Was hoping to make do longer with the tarp. But the wind last week tore it right off. Had to replace the whole roof."
"Well, it looks nice. And it's good it's fixed, isn't it?"
"It's never good to borrow from the Han family." His jaw tightened as he rang up my order. "But sometimes you have to do things you don't want to."
Shokat's words lingered in my mind as I left the market. Just like he didn't want to borrow money, I didn't want to leave my mother when she still hadn't recovered. But the longer I stayed home, the further I fell behind at school. I couldn't keep this up much longer. Amma needed help. We had to do something.
"Amal!"
My classmate Farah's mother called out to me from a distance. She walked at a steady clip toward us.
"Mariam auntie!"
Rabia turned to me.
"That starts with an M, right?"
"Good job," I said. "Here." I dropped change into her palm.
"Go get some kulfis from the man over there."
The girls hurried to the vendor as Mariam approached.
"Don't you look pretty in that shalwar kameez?"
she said when she drew near. She reached out and smoothed the collar.
"When I saw the floral pattern, I knew it would be perfect for you. Told your mother a little bit of lace would add some pop to it."
"Thank you for sewing it," I told her. "It fits me perfectly."
"How is your mother?"
"Tired, but she's doing okay."
"A girl, I heard."
She shook her head. I knew everyone wanted to have a son, but I was getting tired of hearing this. Wasn't she once a little girl, too?
Tell your mother I'll come this afternoon to check in on her. She must have some hand-me-downs she needs fixed up for the baby.
I thanked her before continuing on our way. I laughed when Safa smacked her lips on our way home. White syrup dripped down her chin onto her dress.
You can't do anything without making extra work for me, can you? I said.
I handed the groceries to Praveen when I got home and grabbed a towel to wipe Safa's face. My father sat at the table in the living room. He sorted through an assortment of papers scattered across the desk.
Is everything okay? I asked him.
You're home early.
It will be, he sighed. Work is busier than usual. And your mother's still in bed.
We should phone Rahila Bibi. She'll know what to do.
It's not something the midwife can cure.
Then maybe we can take her to the doctor.
What she needs is time. She'll get better soon enough.
But the thing is, I fidgeted. I've missed a lot of school now, and exams are coming soon. I was hoping I could go back to school tomorrow.
Amal, Safa and Rabia need you.
Praveen could watch the girls until we came back.
Praveen has her own work to do. You know that. Your sisters aren't her responsibility.
She won't mind. She loves the girls.
Enough, Amal!
The sharpness of his voice silenced me.
I'm sorry, Amal, but this is how it has to be now. You're the eldest daughter. Your place is here.
I wanted to tell him it wasn't my choice to be the eldest, but I held my tongue. Why did this random chance have to dictate so much of my destiny?
In a week or so, we can see how things are going, my father continued. But in any case, remember, you have already learned a lot, more than many of the neighborhood girls. You can read and write. What more do you need to know?
I always thought my parents knew me well. So how could he ask me that? What more did I need to know?
The whole world, Abu. The whole world.
Chapter 8. When I walked into the kitchen the next morning, Seema was ironing.
Why aren't you in your uniform? I asked her. You're going to be late for school.
I'm staying.
Seema,
I got up early this morning to help with the laundry.
You work the pile down and then it grows up again, higher than before. The chores are endless. You need me.
Praveen and I will handle it. You have to go to school.
It's not fair. Seema's eyes grew moist. How can I go when you can't?
It isn't fair, but you can't fall behind since you only just began. I want you to go. Seema's eyes watered, but she slipped on her uniform. After she left, I watched her from the window. Hafsa would meet up with her a few steps out of my view. They'd enter the brick schoolhouse and settle into their desks and learn things I didn't know. I was the best student in my class, but soon Hafsa and even Seema would surpass me.
The girls are still sleeping?
Praveen asked as she stepped inside and closed the back door behind her. I nodded.
Good. We might actually get a head start on all the things we need to get done today. Omar will pick up cauliflower on his way home from school. We have enough potatoes, but I'll double check.
What's wrong?
Praveen came in and out, helping so quietly I could forget she was there. But it was Praveen who always double-checked we had everything we needed to prepare our meals and keep the household running. She was the invisible arm propping the family up.
Just thank you, I told her. We don't say it enough. Thank you for everything.
What is this thank you for? She asked. This is what family does. You'll get through this. Come here.
She hugged me.
Everything will be fine.
I wasn't so sure about that. and I wasn't a little kid like Rabia or Safa who was easily comforted by her hugs. But with Praveen's arms around me, everything did ache a little less.
How was school? I asked Seema when she came home that afternoon. It was good, she smiled.
Do you need me to look at your poem? It's due Monday, right?
Of course you have to look at it, she said. But you have your own to write.
Seema, Abu isn't going to budge.
He doesn't need to.
What do you mean? She stuck a hand in her book bag and handed me a folder.
What's this?
I asked her.
Take a look.
I parted the folder. The poetry assignment. The spelling test. The math test. But Seema, I can't write a poem without a lesson on it.
And how can I take the tests? I'll test you, she said. I talked to Miss Sadia, and she agreed. As long as you keep up with your work and take the tests, she'll keep you on the roster. I also promised her I'd take good notes and teach you the lessons myself. Even the poetry lesson.
Don't look at me like that. I can do it. And I'll teach you everything I learn, because you are coming back. She gripped my shoulder. I read Miss Sadia's familiar scrawl on the first paper. Hi, Amal. This is a lot, I know. But if anyone can do it, you can. I'm rooting for you. I hugged Seema. I thought hope had vanished. But hope was a tricky thing. It found its way back to me. Chapter 9. The girls were busy watching television, and Seema and I were getting settled at the table to go over her notes for the day's geography lesson, when my mother's friends knocked at the door.
I come bearing ladus this time, Fozia said, stepping inside with Mariam. Is your mother up for visitors now?
She's still not feeling well.
Now, this is too much. She has to start meeting people eventually, Fozia said.
Fozia was right. Something had to be done to snap her out of her fog. Maybe visitors would help. I stepped inside my mother's room. Amma, I said, Fozia and Mariam, auntie, are here to see you and the baby.
This isn't a good time.
Her voice was dull. Even though the room was dim, I could still make out the circles under her eyes etched so deep. I wondered if time would ever erase them. Lubna lay swaddled tightly, fast asleep. It's what I was calling the new baby, though it wasn't officially her name. My mother didn't name us until we were a year old, and she knew for sure we would survive. I picked her up and cradled her in my arms. They only want to say hello. I'll straighten up the room a little and tell them to come in.
I'm sorry, she reached out and stroked my arm. I'm foggy lately. I'll shake it off soon.
I know you will, I managed to say. Her gold bangles from her wedding dowry, the ones she never removed because they were her most valuable possessions, clinked against her arms when she touched me. Her frame seemed smaller than it did a few weeks earlier. I drew open the curtains and put away the handful of clothes scattered on the floor. You can come in now, I told her friends. I took my time making chai and arranging a plate of biscuits on a wooden tray. By the time I carried the tray into my parents' bedroom, I was surprised to see my mother sitting up and chatting.
It's devastating, Fozia was saying. I've been there myself, you know.
I'm not sure how one even recovers. Or if you even can, my mother responded.
I stared at my mother. It was one thing to feel this way when my baby sister was born. But to still think it now?
Manira can't possibly recover. He burned their orange groves to a charred crisp,
Fozia continued.
I heard it was her children playing with matches in the field, Mariam said.
Yes, of course you heard that.
Who would dare accuse him openly? Mark my words, one day he's going to hurt the wrong person, Fosia said. These things catch up with you.
He runs this town. Men like him suffer no consequences, my mother said. My hands unclenched. It was the Han family they were talking about.
Never thought I'd say this, but it was better when his father was running this town, Fosia said. Sure, Han Saab threatened all sorts of things, but did he ever do them?
To teach a lesson here and there, yes, but his son Jawad? Ever since he took charge, things are out of control. I really think he enjoys punishing people.
Owe him nothing and he cannot harm you, my mother replied.
Except everyone does, Mariam said. We need his filthy money. Maybe if we all united against him, something could be done. It's happening more and more these days. People are banding together and overthrowing their landlords. Read about it in the newspaper all the time.
The Han family would never let that happen here.
Remember Hazarabad? Fosia asked.
The people in that town made a pact, refused to pay their debts until he stopped with the threats. Forget Manira's measly acres. He destroyed their entire village, every last orange grove and cotton field. Jawad Saab sent quite the message.
My mother lifted the teacup from the ground and brought it to her lips. She took a sip. I'm thankful we're on the other end of the village, far away from him, she said. I gathered their empty teacups. I didn't really care about Jawad Saab and his acts of vengeance. My mother could have been discussing the devil himself for all it mattered. I was just glad to see my mother drink her tea. It had to be a sign. I stepped into the kitchen as my father came home. He slipped off his shoes on the woven mat by the front door.
Fosia and Mariam Aunty are in with Amma right now, I told him excitedly. She's drinking chai and talking. She even smiled.
Good, my father said. Maybe she's starting to get better.
Why didn't I push her to meet her friends sooner? I went into my bedroom and ran my hand over my uniform hanging in the closet. It was starched and ready. Maybe in a few days I could wear it again.
Amal,
my father said. He watched me from the doorway.
I didn't mean to get your hopes up. Drinking a cup of tea is nice, but it's still going to take time for her to fully recover and be up and running the house again.
But maybe...
No, Amal. I'm sorry, but it has to be this way.
But did it really have to be this way? If I were a boy, would I be staying home to fold laundry and iron clothes? If I were a son... Would he so casually tell me to forget my dreams? I rushed outside and sank onto the front steps. My mother was adamant about our education. If only she could get better, everything could go back to normal.
Look who it is!
Hafsa pedaled up to me on her younger brother's bicycle. She dug her sandals into the ground, slowing it to a halt. Do your parents know you're riding a bicycle again? I asked her. Most people around here frowned upon girls riding bicycles, and Hafsa's parents had let her know they were one of them.
If my brothers can ride a bike, then I can too, she said. Besides, maybe I'll be the next Zenith Irfan and bike across the country.
That was a motorcycle, I reminded her.
Same difference.
The voices of children playing cricket in a nearby open field floated over to us.
How's Seema as a teacher? She asked.
The power's gone straight to her head, I let out a small laugh. She won't even repeat the questions on the spelling test, no matter how much I beg.
Sounds like Seema, Hafsa smiled.
How's Miss Sadia? I asked. Ever get her that bell?
Ha, I wish. She asks about you every single day, though,
Hafsa rolled her eyes.
If we thought you were her favorite before, we definitely know now.
Well,
You can become her new favorite, I swallowed. My father doesn't seem like he'll be letting me go back to school anytime soon.
No way! You better be back. We're going to go to college, remember?
I'm not rooming with a total stranger. Let's hope he changes his mind then.
Hope?
Hafsa frowned.
You think my dad doesn't grumble about all the money my books and uniforms cost him? But he knows it's less of a headache to send me to school than to keep me home.
You can't just hope, Amal. You have to keep at him, and don't take no for an answer. After Hafsa left, I thought about what she had said. Maybe she was right. I had to come up with some kind of plan. But I also knew no plan could work if my mother wasn't better. Chapter 10. The lights flickered off again the next afternoon. The overhead fan slowed to a halt. Another blackout. My forehead trickled with sweat. Seema was back from school and doing her best to corral Safa and Rabia, whose shouts echoed off the concrete floor, hammering into my brain. It turned out my father was right about yesterday. The cup of tea with Fozia and Mariam wasn't any sort of magic cure. As usual, my mother spent the morning with the curtains drawn. She barely spoke a word when I went inside to check on her. She wasn't on the mend. Maybe she never would be. I had to get out for a little while. I counted the money I needed for the market. Seema's back was turned to me.
"Get your hands out of the flour," she yelled at a powder-white Safa.
"I'll get her," I wanted to say, but the words never left my mouth. I was allowed a few moments of peace without any of my sisters yanking at my sleeve, wasn't I? Just this once? I slipped past Seema and out the house. It was only a trip to the market, but I would cherish this time to myself. The sounds of tractors, bicycle bells, and children playing cricket in the street filled me with a sense of calm. I knew each store owner and vendor I passed. I knew their wives and their children. But today, traveling the same streets I'd walked hundreds of times before, without little hands to keep out of fruit stands, without tiny feet to steer around idling rickshaws, I noticed it all as though for the first time. The sun was hotter than usual for the time of year, but I even enjoyed this. Shokut's store was bustling. My neighbors filled the aisles, sifting through the vegetables and fruit. "Why is it so busy today?" I asked my neighbor Balkis.
"New arrivals, pomegranates, coconuts, apples," she replied.
She waved at the shoppers with one hand and fanned her face with a newspaper with the other. Needed some turmeric, but didn't know I'd have to fight these crowds. You'd think Shokut was giving things away for free. I squeezed through the aisle. Two pomegranates rested in the crate perched next to the onions and apples. Red, sweet, delicious pomegranates. I counted my money. I had enough to buy one extra item. Something small. Just for me. I snatched one up as a woman grabbed the other. One of my neighbors argued with Shokut over bruised zucchini and squash. I grabbed a handful of onions and some ginger and leaned past her to pay. Slinging my satchel over my shoulder, I stepped back onto the dusty road. I gripped the red fruit in my palm. Maybe this pomegranate was the sign of hope I needed. A bit of sweetness after all the bitterness. I would share it with Omer and Seema. It didn't make everything better, but the thought made me happy. Even now, I can remember how happy I felt in that moment. That moment, before my world changed. One second, I was standing. The next, slammed backward onto the ground. A car, black with darkened windows. How did I miss it? How wrapped up in my mind was I not to notice a car? The door opened, and footsteps approached. I took in the clean-shaven face, the closely trimmed hair, and the eyes hidden by dark sunglasses. People began to gather by the side of the road. Balkis, Hira, Shokat, customers from the market. Why didn't any of them help me? Why did they stare at this strange man and say nothing? I stumbled to my feet. My hands were scraped and bloody. My leg throbbed when I put my weight on it, but I could stand. I gritted my teeth and gathered the bruised ginger and onions lying scattered along the road and tossed them in my satchel.
"You should pay better attention," the stranger said.
I saw his hand reach down and pick up my pomegranate. He stepped closer to me.
"Are you hurt?"
he asked. "Where do you live? I'll take you home." He was smiling. His teeth were so white, the whitest I had ever seen. "I'm fine," I told him. I reached up to adjust my chador, cloaking myself from him. I was about to walk away when I realized he was still holding my pomegranate. He followed my gaze.
"My mother loves these," he said. "You won't mind if I take this for her, will you? Of course, I'll pay you for it, and you can buy more."
"It was the last one."
"Will this do?"
He pulled out a handful of money. What was he doing? Did he think I was a beggar? That everything was for sale? My mother's voice told me to let this go. Something was off with this man. Let him have the fruit and walk away. But all I could see was the red pomegranate and how he grasped it in his palm as though it was already his. I thought of my father, who had no time for my dreams, my little sisters and their endless demands. Suddenly I felt tired, tired of feeling powerless, tired of denying my own needs because someone else needed something more, including this man, this stranger, buying me off, denying me this smallest of pleasures. "It's not for sale."
"So you'll give it without charge?"
His smirk taunted me. My scraped hands burned.
"You hit me with your car and want to take my things?"
My voice trembled. I heard it growing louder, as if it were coming from someone else.
"I'm not giving it away."
I snatched it from his hand. The crowd murmured. I started walking away.
"Stop!"
His voice was so loud, it echoed off the buildings. I didn't stop. I walked quickly until I turned the corner toward home. Only then did I break into a run. The farther I ran, the sicker I felt. Who was that man? What exactly had I done? Chapter 11. The knock on the door the next morning sent my heart racing. I opened it slowly, half expecting to see the man with the dark sunglasses. But it was Fozia. She came empty-handed today. I waited for her to ask me about yesterday. If there was gossip, Fozia would have been one of the first to hear it. But she barely glanced at me before going to see my mother. I lingered by my parents' door while my mother and Fozia talked about the baby. As they discussed what to do about Lubna's sniffling, I stood there and waited for the words to leave Fozia's mouth, to tell my mother what happened. Finally, Fozia said,
"I'll pick up the baby's medicine for you. I was on my way to the market anyway. Glad you're doing better."
She stood up. She walked past me, and I watched her leave. Why didn't she say anything? Maybe I made a bigger deal out of what happened. Either way, I learned my lesson. I would follow the rules from now on. I would never step so much as a toe out of this house without one of my sisters with me.
"Read to us?"
Rabia asked me that afternoon. She brought a book and pulled on my arm. I had spent the day working as hard as I could. I mopped the floors and scrubbed the walls. I folded and put away all the laundry and chopped up the onions for dinner. I sat down on the sofa with her and Safa. I smiled at the story she chose. My father had bought it years ago for me when he went to Lahore.
You know, this was my book once, I asked.
We know, Rabia said. That's why we love it.
I read them the story about a kitten who decided to adopt a basket of mice. I laughed along with my sisters when the kitten scolded the mice before they scattered, running in every direction. I was so engrossed, I didn't hear the door swing open and Seema charge in until she grabbed me by the arm and ushered me into the kitchen.
They're talking about it, she said before I could say a word.
Who is?
Everyone. They're talking about yesterday.
Before I could ask her more, the door opened again. My father.
Tell me it's not true.
Sweat trickled down his forehead.
If you tell me it's a lie, I will believe you.
I'm sorry, I whispered.
Amal, his hands fell to his sides. Talking back to Jawad Saab? Of all people, what have you done?
Jawad Saab? My mouth went dry like the dusty earth. Fozia called him worse than his notorious father. And I yelled at him, in front of everyone.
He wants a word with me, this Friday. One of his officers dropped off this note.
He held up a crumpled piece of paper.
Didn't know what was going on until the workers told me.
Abu, I stammered. I should have told you right away, but his car, it hit me. I was minding my own business walking home from the market, but he wouldn't let me be. He wanted to give me a ride home. He took my things and wouldn't give them back.
I don't care if he wanted your entire satchel of things, my father snapped. You give it to him. You drop everything at his feet, apologize, and walk away. Don't you have any idea the lengths that family goes to just to satisfy their egos? And Jawad Saab especially. Don't you know what he could do to us now?
Malik, enough. You're scaring the little ones. It took me a second to recognize my mother out of bed. She stood at the archway of her bedroom door, the baby in her arms.
Do you have any idea what your daughter's been up to? He shouted.
I didn't know who he was, I whimpered.
Did it matter? Have we not taught you how to act in public? Bite your tongue 1 minute and prevent a lifetime of burden.
And yelling won't solve this, my mother said. Let's talk again once we've calmed down.
It's not fair.
Tears slipped down my cheeks.
His car hit me. He took my things. Why am I the one in trouble?
Since when has life been fair?
He shook his head.
You can read books and tell me the capital of China, but you have no idea how the world works. God only knows how he will find it fit to punish us.
He wouldn't do anything serious over something so small, would he? I asked.
He's done far more for far less.
All this over a simple pomegranate, still lying uneaten in my satchel, buried beneath my bed. I thought of the person from the car, the gleaming white teeth, the close-cropped hair, and the way his voice went from sweet like honey to cold and dark within seconds. I thought of the stories I'd heard all my life, the way Shokat's jaw clenched at the mention of his name, the way Fozia said he loved to dole out punishments and had personally burned an entire village to the ground. So what kind of punishment would he dream up for me? Chapter 12. I got out of bed as the sun peeked its head over the horizon. I hadn't slept in 2 days. Jawad Saab would be here tomorrow. Stepping into the kitchen, I blinked. My mother was out of bed again. She perched on a stool on the ground, kneading dough for buttery breakfast parathas like she used to. Her waist-length hair fell unbraided in waves around her shoulders.
You're up early, she said.
Her eyes were red, her cheeks blotchy.
I'm sorry, I said. Guilt pooled inside me, liquid and dense.
She wiped her floured hands with a rag and stood up. "I'm the one who should apologize," she told me. "I haven't been a good mother lately."
"No, Amma, please don't say that."
"You're my eldest, but you're still a child," she said to me. "I don't know. It's like I'd fallen into some kind of well the last month. Everything was so dark. It happens for a while each time I have a child."
"Because we're girls," I whispered.
"What? That's not true." She gripped my hand in hers. "I was there. You were crying. You wanted a son."
"Yes. We did want a son," she sighed.
"But it doesn't mean we don't love our daughters. You're part of me. How can I not love you?"
"Why is having a boy all anyone can talk about? Who else will care for us in our old age? Who will run the farm and keep your grandfather's dream alive?"
"I could," I told her. "Seema and I both would."
"You will get married one day. Then you'll belong to a new family."
"But I'm part of this family."
"I wish it wasn't this way, but this is how the world works. It doesn't mean I don't love my daughters. I love each and every one of you."
"What are we going to do, Amma?" I whispered. "I made such a huge mistake."
"Don't you worry. We'll fix it. We will." I used to sit with my mother most mornings as she made breakfast in the early hours while everyone slept. It was the only chance I ever had to be alone with her. I would tell her what I learned in school, the latest drama I might have had with my friends. If anyone could come up with a way to fix this, she could. She always knew how to make things right. When Omer and Seema returned from school, we gathered by the wire chicken coop in the backyard, obscured from view. "I've been running it over and over in my head," I told them. "I still can't figure out what he's going to do tomorrow."
"He's not going to do anything," Seema said. "If he wanted to do something, he'd have done it by now."
"Everyone knows. He doesn't think. He acts."
"The things he's done, though. Rumors," she said. "They're just rumors."
I looked at Omer, but he twisted the heel of his sandal in the dirt. He didn't meet my eyes. I didn't want to tell Seema about Manira's blackened fields. I couldn't bring myself to correct her. Afraid if I said it out loud, it might come true.
"Don't worry," she put her arm around me. "By this time tomorrow, this will all be behind us."